Welcome, Mark O'Donnell here. This is episode number 6, I believe. Isn't that right, gentlemen behind the board? Thank you very much for the thumbs up. Episode number 6 of the Operations Excellence Podcast. And today, for the first half of the episode, we have invited back Ms. Stephanie Zumbel from Abacus Grant Services. Stephanie, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
So we chatted, we connected, I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, roughly,
yes.
For a cup of coffee.
Yes.
And I was absolutely thrilled to hear about all the stuff that's happening and where your business is heading, because I think you were kind of on the cusp of it.
Yes.
A couple of months ago, yeah. When we had you on the show.
It actually feels like yesterday.
Yeah, it's a blur, right? It's a whirlwind. So tell us a little bit and tell the listeners a little bit about where you're at with the business.
So as I move through gaining new clients and working out the kinks of onboarding and identifying projects, word of mouth has kind of taken over, and clients are giving me more clients, and people are sharing, you know, what I do for them, and my business is growing at an incredible pace. I moved into office space.
Nice.
I have a staff of 4 people. Couple part time.
Last time we talked, I think it was just one.
Yeah, and I have a full time salaried employee.
Congratulations!
Right now, this actually was her first salaried paycheck. It's going to happen. So that's a big deal. A big deal to me.
Absolutely.
And it's been so fun just building this, and there are growing pains in that scaling a business is not easy.
No.
Getting to this point is fun,
right.
But it's also terrifying, and it gets to the point where you don't stop working ever.
Yeah, never not working.
Yes.
So talk a little bit, if you would, about, you mentioned referrals. So clients and other people are giving you referrals. Yeah. Has that been one of the biggest drivers of some of this growth?
It's been actually the entire driver.
Cool.
I have done no marketing really to speak of. The only marketing that I have actively done is I'm putting more of a presence out there, mm-hmm. on social media, mm-hmm. specifically LinkedIn. And that's something I'm really trying to teach myself how to do in an effective way, mm-hmm. and a meaningful way, not just noise, but
right.
contributing to what's happening in the different sectors that I'm working in right now.
Right.
And I'm also partnering with other individuals to create a biggest service offering through partnerships, which is neat and interesting and something that I never really anticipated happening.
Really?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Talk a little bit about some of those partnerships. I mean, you know, you mentioned the specific companies, but what kinds of partnerships, what kind of services?
So I connected with somebody who works in the Washington, D.C. lobbyist space, who also had a connection who works in the finance venture capital space. And in conversations, we realized that we can offer our clients so much when we work together.
Hmm.
We can get that non-dilutive pre-seed funding, mm-hmm. in place, and get them politically in a space where the company's information and name and brand is being shared in the right rooms,
right.
for federal funding. And then make a company appear attractive enough on paper to get traction in the venture capital world.
Right.
So it's just this perfect little relationship that the three of us have working together and getting the most for our individual clients by tapping into the talents of the other, you know, of the other partners.
Right.
Of course, we're lucky enough in that we work in similar circles.
Right.
Each one of us is as kind of innovative and creative.
Mm.
And we have the same energy and drive and the same types of clients. So it's
right.
just a unicorn situation that's really fun
that
to
is
play with and push forward.
That is so cool to hear, and I'm so happy for you.
Thank
and
you.
You know, the energy was obvious when we sat down for a cup of coffee a couple of weeks ago. You were like,
wow.
Yeah, and it's so cool to see that. So these partnerships, were they kind of just organic? Was it something you sought out, or was it more kind of like, hey, people that you started working with, and hey, we got something interesting here?
So in the coaching that I went through with you.
Yeah.
One of the things that you pointed out to me and we talked about was tapping into all the relationships that mm-hmm. I have. And we talked about this in the last podcast as well.
Right.
I took for granted those relationships that I had.
Yeah.
And as a result of these relationships, that's how I started a conversation with one of the partners.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking about what we were doing, and it just turned out that there were so many similarities, and our client base were kind of overlapping with each other.
Right.
And in those conversations, we just came up with this idea to help each other out and help our clients out. So it is a direct effect of having all of these relationships and maintaining these contacts and expanding a network that has led to mm-hmm. all of these new, you know, partnerships and in turn new clients.
Yeah, and it sounds like perhaps all that was different was maybe you approaching those conversations with those relationships from a little different perspective.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, the light bulb goes on and it's, hey,
yeah,
there's an opportunity here. Yeah.
Well, I mean, nobody ever pointed it out to me before. I was, when we first met, I was working full time for another company, and I was trying to start this off as a side gig, and I wasn't cognizant of all that I really bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I could get clients, but I never realized the magnitude and what I brought to the table. And we talked about this before, the value that I add to each one of these projects.
Right.
And that's something that I'm really starting to push, is building out bigger projects
mm-hmm.
by pulling in different players to the table. When I can see the interconnectivity of what all my clients are doing, and I have been able to, you know, tap into that and pull different players to the table and have these larger scale projects as a result.
Isn't that so cool, rewarding, and fun?
So fun.
Yeah.
I'm having fun.
Because and what I'm hearing is, so you took those discussions about how important relationships were and how to better utilize those relationships mutually beneficially, right?
Yeah.
And it really just started to fall into place. And I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking about my relationship with Matt.
Uh-huh.
Matt Major here, the owner of Growth Mode.
Uh-huh.
And he and I have known each other almost 3 years now. And it really just started from some conversations. We were both members of a local networking group, and that's kind of how we met and hit it off,
mm-hmm.
right? But as time has gone on, I think we've really come to see we both bring a unique value
mm-hmm.
to clients, potential clients,
mm-hmm.
and we both have, I believe, a very, very similar sense of what the value is in good leadership.
Yeah.
And that's one of the many reasons I have such respect for Matt. But, you know, we've also helped each other. You know, I've referred him and given him some business. And I think I was one of the first people he mentioned when he was thinking about this whole podcast thing back late last year. And he goes, I got this idea. And unless, I don't think he finished the whole idea. And I was like, I'm in. You know, like, what's it going to cost? What are you thinking? And, you know, but that's, those relationships, it's just business and life is all about relationships.
Yeah.
And until I think we really realize that, and, you know, I always say, if I meet and I'm meeting with a potential client, quote unquote, even if I don't get their business, maybe I make a new friend.
Yes.
Right. And who knows, maybe we can do business together or refer each other or help each other out some way in the future, that maybe it's not immediate direct business, but never shut the door.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what the future is going to bring.
Yeah.
You know, and so building, I was telling Matt the story about being invited to play golf a few months ago from two gentlemen I met through another networking group, and the fourth guy in that foursome, I didn't know, and, you know, here we are a couple months later, and I'm going to end up doing business with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all about those relationships and getting to know people and letting people get to know us, and I think a lot of that is also that comfortability in our own skin.
Yeah.
You know? That's so, because that, whether we know it or not, that comes across.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if we're uptight and we're not comfortable or we're not confident that we are bringing value, that comes across.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But if we are, and we don't even have to sell it per se,
it
comes across.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny. So I know one of the things you and I talked about is for some of us, it's difficult to take just a straight compliment. Right. And I still can struggle with that. Like the correct answer when somebody says, hey, that was a really great job, is to just say thank you.
Yeah.
And not poo-poo it.
Thank you is a complete sentence.
Yeah. Right. Right. We talked about that. You know, and it's funny because the golf tournament we just had, I had friends and family, you know, saying wonderful things and, oh, you did this. And I'm like, yeah, you know, we have a lot of people. And they're like, no. You know, I still can struggle with that myself sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, just say thank you. Right?
Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting, you know, that you say golf, because this is something that we also talked about a lot, was taking time to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
And one of those things that we do, at least you and I do, to take care of ourselves, is play golf.
To a fault in my case sometimes.
Well, I'm trying to get there.
Hey, you never know. Might do some business on the golf course too, right?
Yeah, so. And that's the beautiful thing about golf. But I think that when we have this conversation about growth and scaling and relationships and everything else, something that I'm finding to be just as important as all of it.
Mm.
Is taking that time to take care of yourself, because you know, the next you can be running at a mad pace and you look up and you realize I literally haven't taken an hour of time for me to catch up with what's happening at a mad pace, but also, you know, digest and reflect and take care of yourself.
So true, right? That a lot of us type A personalities, we're so driven, so goal-oriented, right, that we have to achieve and boom, 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 boom. But that can be so focused and so we become so identified with what we do for a living that that can, if we allow it, become the sole thing that defines us.
Yeah.
And that's not all of who I am.
No.
Right? It's a big chunk of who I am, but it's not everything about who I am as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, and I learned this the hard way, over the years, and I wish I had learned it before I got to my early 50s, but to be honest with you, I don't think, really learn it and internalize it, that if I don't really take care of myself in all aspects of my life, two things are going to be true. I'm not going to be really happy, and I'm not really going to be at my best, right? Because if I don't take the time to recharge the batteries, physically, mentally, emotionally, how good am I going to be at connecting with others, which is really what doing business in the world and actually just being present for those that I care about and care about me is that's what it's about, right? If I can't do that. And I think, I know, for me, I learned that the hard way. But, you know, I sometimes myself can learn at the speed of pain, right? And I'm glad I learned the lesson now and not 10 years later, you know? So at least it's come through now. But yeah, taking care of ourselves. And I do think, you know, one of the things I use in my coaching practice and leadership development is that life wheel, right? And you and I talked about this, all those different aspects of our life. Most of us focus primarily on financial and career, right? Like we put 90%+ of our focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's only one of the six aspects, right? Mm-hmm. There's mental, right? Mm-hmm. There's family, there's ethics and beliefs, there's physical, you know, and all the rest of it. And, you know, if I am, you know, how many times have you seen families, like people not be good spouses, not be good parents? And it's not because they don't want to. It's only because all their focus is on financial and career.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up with a great career and all this money and either an unhappy marriage or they divorce.
Yeah. Yeah.
And their kids can't stand them because they were never home.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's just there's a lot to it. And I think just taking the time to step back and go, I'm a whole person.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I need to pay attention to all aspects of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do remember a professor we had. I went through LeMoyne's MBA program.
Mm-hmm.
I think I finished in 03. That's a long time ago. But one of the guys that actually did the leadership course towards the end, which was co-taught by two individuals, one who had spent most of his career in Fortune 500 companies. He was former military. He was just phenomenal background in leadership. And the other was a professor from the English department. But it was interesting because they took a lot of literature from different leadership styles, and it was just fascinating course. But one of the things he said towards the very end, he said, you know, don't be that person that ends up with the big house and the Ferrari in the driveway, but their wife and their, or their, you know, wife or husband and their kids can't stand them.
Yeah.
Right. Don't
yeah.
be that person.
Yeah.
Right. Like, be conscious
yeah.
of how you're living life and where you're investing time. And I know you can appreciate that term, investing is as opposed
yeah.
to spending.
Well, I mean, you know, you talk about it and it's easy as a concept and a theory. But then when you're sitting in a seat where you're responsible for other people's livelihoods for the first time in your life.
It's a big deal.
I mean, and not people that sit in your household, you know, the people
right.
who are
sure.
starting to work for you.
Sure.
It feels way different.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really something that you have to think about constantly
mm-hmm.
is how am I going to fit my family into this equation? And if you add that layer of how fast-paced doing business, especially in the United States, is.
Sure.
And then you add another layer of having clients that live outside of our country in different time zones.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to fall into this constant cycle
oh, yeah.
of trying to
oh, yeah.
be everything, everywhere,
oh, yeah.
all at once.
Totally understand, right? Last job as a general manager, local division here, right? I mean, I was working 10, 11 hours minimum in the office every day if I wasn't traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And we did business. We had projects all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It was not uncommon for me to come home, have dinner, and then get on a Teams call,
yeah.
you know, to Taipei
mm-hmm.
at 10 o'clock at night. That mm-hmm. would last an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And, of course, you can't go to bed mm-hmm. right after a call like that because your brain is just whirling. You know, so an hour later, you go to bed, it's 12:30, and now you're up at, you know, 6 a.m. again, and here we go.
Right.
And I think the point is, and this is something you and I talked about, is to be purposeful,
yeah.
to be aware,
yeah.
right, and really think about what your priorities are.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, part of what I talk about with people in time strategies and time management is to have, and you and I talked about this, I know explicitly, have one calendar. That you put everything on. Because how many times, right, do we have calendars for work, then we have a personal calendar, and then our spouse or significant other has their calendar, and good luck.
Yeah.
Right? Because unless you have all that in one place, you're going to make commitments that are going to step on each other.
Yes.
Right? And then you end up making trade-offs, and then the game begins.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm playing whack-a-mole.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because
mm-hmm.
I'm never... So if I start with everything on one document, you know, and I I'm not plugging anybody. I use Microsoft Outlook to,
yeah.
just because I've learned it over the years. I'm
yeah.
comfortable with it. But my personal stuff, my professional stuff, my wife's critical stuff, it's all on one. So literally, and it's, you know, linked to my phone.
Yep.
So if I'm out and about and somebody says, hey, Mark, can you do this at 2 o'clock at such and such a date? I can look. And within seconds, give them an answer that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
Because me, like you in the past, would have just said yes and then figured it out later.
Yeah.
And I, you know, stuff is going to struggle, right? But it's just, I think it's about being purposeful, being aware, and then just having a little bit of discipline
mm-hmm.
to do things a little differently. And,
yeah.
and the rewards are way beyond what the investment is.
Yeah.
You know? I just think that's so important. If we could twist, and that was great. I'm really glad you went down that path because I think it's so important. And I think a lot of people struggle with what we just talked about.
Yeah.
And again, I think you also hit a really important point. Theoretically, everybody would kind of get what we just said, but I think it's making the effort. You're going to make the commitment to you and your life and what's important to you to do that. And if you're willing to do that, there's some very simple practices to put it in place. And you've started to kind of figure
it's
that
kind
out.
Kind of, no. It's not figured out.
Well, okay. You're headed in the path.
I'm trying.
For the fact, you know, as well as I've gotten to know you now, for you to come in here today and say to us, yeah, I'm played golf.
Yeah.
That's a win.
Yeah.
That's a win.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a win. So good for you.
Yeah. I mean, and last year, even 10 months ago, I would have laughed at somebody telling me that I'm not going to be able to take time to play golf because it feeds my soul. It's just one of those things where it's literally, you know, you and a ball and everything else kind of fades away.
Right. Right. And whatever that is, and it's different for everybody, right? For some people, it might be, you know, I've got friends that are big into kayaking, right? So they get on the river and they kayak for a few hours and it's, you know, they get in touch with nature and it's physical. Mm-hmm. And whatever the activity is, but go do it because it's good for you.
Yeah.
One thing, and this is a little different vein from what we've been talking about so far, but you mentioned the growth and the fear, right? And I think that's a real natural reaction. Like, holy crap, how am I going to handle this?
Mm-hmm.
And then the fear that now I've got employees, so now I am responsible, and I feel that, you know, over the course of my career, I've literally at different times have hundreds of people, and I'm the kind of guy that very personally feels that responsibility and takes it very seriously.
Yeah.
So what kind of coping mechanisms have you learned or are you trying to practice? Because I think, you know, like you and I talked about previously in several conversations, what we feel is what we feel. It's neither right nor wrong, typically.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we do with it.
Yeah.
Right? Like I can let fear immobilize me or I can act in spite of it.
All along, fear has always driven me. Fear of, you know, whether it... Early on in my career, I was so focused on people-pleasing.
Yeah.
Fear of somebody being mad at me drove me.
Yeah.
And then for a while, I got into my, like, angry era. And fear of somebody... Fear driven by anger, right? Being angry at somebody for saying that I couldn't do something and fearing that they were right pushed me to do that.
Have you ever heard the concept that anger is a secondary emotion?
Yeah, because it's driven by fear. Yeah,
bingo.
I'm cognizant of that.
And it's typically fear that we're either not going to get something we want, or that we're going to lose something we have.
Yeah,
right.
That's really what drives what drives me. You know, fear. I'm not going to have enough money to meet payroll.
Right.
Well, let me go find another client.
Right.
Or let me, you know, tack on another service offering for what I can provide to my clients.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, write a grant that a client didn't even consider, come up with a strategy.
Right.
Fear drives everything for me, really.
Yeah.
Just fear that I'm not going to be able to take it where I want to take it. I mean, and then... When we talk about being more purposeful, what does success look like?
Yeah.
And that's something that we talked a lot about.
Yeah.
When do we stop? When do I stop and say, okay, Abacus is big enough.
Right.
This is where we live. We sit with the clients that we have. And I start saying no, which is really hard for me because it's so interesting the worlds that you can enter when you start building out, you know, new markets. And it's hard to identify when is enough enough and when to stop being driven by fear and settle in and scale where you're at.
So a couple thoughts on that. I think if you make the time and effort to really think about what's your dream, right? What does, you said it already, what does success look like, right? And I don't know that we ever quote unquote arrive, right? We are all works in progress, and you know, I know at some point, you know, I'm in my early 60s now. I mean, as I approach 70 or get to 70, at some point I'm going to say, you know what, I'm not going to necessarily go and drive more business. So I get what you're saying, but I don't know where that point is. Yeah. And I try to focus on, all right, what's the dream? What's the value, right? And so really kind of setting goals is, I think, what it comes down to. Yeah. And having those goals in mind that touch all those different aspects of life that mm-hmm. we talked about, not just the career financial, right? Mm-hmm. Like what do I want my life to look like in 5 years and 6 years and set those goals. And I think that will help you answer, because, you know, that may change over time. Like, you may get to a place 6 months or a year from now mm-hmm. that says, you know what, I can't handle any more clients, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to stop having conversations.
Right.
Right? That you might turn that faucet on again, right? I think it's and how big do you want to get it, and how much do you want to manage? And we both know, right, the bigger it is, then, you know, more management is required, more mm-hmm. administration is required. What's that look like? Mm-hmm. Scalability, organizational structure. We could talk about that
right.
for a couple of episodes, right? That's a whole different right. animal. But I think you'll be able to answer it yourself pretty clearly if you have this vision, mm-hmm. you know, and you keep that vision. Because I talk about that, and I think you and I touched on this when we worked together, as kind of the North Star.
Yeah.
Right? Like where do I want to go?
Yeah.
And if I ever get really to a point where I'm at a crossroads, I need to look at that North Star to yeah. figure out my direction.
Well, and I think that another piece of this is Abacus right now is at a place in time where strategy and creating that vision and leaning into operations excellence to help define that.
Yeah.
That's key.
And creating that strategic plan, mm-hmm. right, which is going to include, you're going to have your vision for growth and where you want to take the business and how you're going to get there, but then also what does the organization structure
right.
need to look like and, right. and the processes and the things behind that to support it.
Yeah.
Right? Because, it, you know, just working with another local client, I was there yesterday, and they're doing amazingly well this year, but they're literally at the point where, you know, the owner is asking the other people on the executive team, like, are we near the breaking point yet? And they're kind of like, we're close. Like, yeah. we need to get this more scalable. So, yeah. you know, now they're kind of retrenching, saying we need to make some other changes in process and organizational structure to make sure that we're, as we continue to push the growth, we can service the growth.
Because
mm-hmm. the last thing you want to do is get all these great new clients and then not make them happy.
And therein lies the fear.
Yeah, understood.
Yeah.
Right. But I think, again, I go back to purposeful, right, having a little bit of discipline, having a plan, understanding mm-hmm. that, you know, Mike Tyson had a great, not a huge fan of Mike Tyson, no offense, Mr. Tyson, but he had a great line that said, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of a different way of saying it, is everybody's got a plan until life happens.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding, it doesn't mean you don't plan.
Yeah.
It means now I adjust the plan.
Yeah.
Because guess what? Today I know something that I didn't know yesterday
mm-hmm.
or last month when mm-hmm. we did the plan. So, but you still have a very clear idea where you want to be. Now mm-hmm. you just got to kind of tack how you're going to get there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I do think you're spot on with that. So you got planning coming up. You continue to work on building out the organization.
Mm-hmm.
What else is in the future in the cards for Abacus?
Just growth, a new offering. So I told you last time that I hired a CFO.
Mm-hmm.
He and I have developed a new offering, a new department.
Nice.
Division. We're offering financial support to clients looking for non-dilutive funding. And a lot of startups don't have, you know, it's one person usually driving
right.
growth, and not all people are financially savvy.
Sure.
So when I get in front of these startups and they're looking to get grant money, what they need in place fiscally isn't there, meaning QuickBooks, chart of accounts.
So this offering on top of your services with partners and yourself to actually go get the funding, this is more administrative internal to help them get their house in order financially to be able to go get that.
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That really fits the puzzle.
Yeah. Nice. And I mean, it's just kind of modular.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can just go in and do one piece. And if they need something from start to finish and they need post award after they're awarded the grant money, we can do that too.
Right. Meaning reporting and things like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's fun.
That's awesome.
And then I'd like to see another kind of division specifically for nonprofits, because I have some nonprofit clients which involve it's a different approach than defense and tech startups.
Right.
So, yeah, I just kind of see growing the company in different ways, but forward at the same time.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Stephanie, I want to say thank you for coming back. It's
so
always
fun.
A pleasure
to
talk with you, and I am truly, truly excited, you know, watching what's going on, and it's just especially the fact that it hasn't taken a lot of time and you've really gained this traction.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch.
It's a whirlwind.
Yep. Well, keep the faith.
Thanks.
Stay centered. Don't forget to take care of yourself.
Thank you.
And if you need an extra person to play golf, you know how to get a hold of
okay.
me. Okay. So. All right. We'll be back with part two of the episode shortly. Welcome back to part two of episode number six of the Operations Excellence Podcast. Still Mark O'Donnell with you. And our guest for part two of today's podcast is Drew Brooks from RB Woodcraft. Drew, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here. Very excited.
Been trying to get you on for a few months, but I know with the business and your schedule, it's been a pretty hectic pace for you.
Yes. I apologize. It's been couple asks now, I think three or four times.
No apology necessary.
Locked it in.
No apology necessary. I know enough about what's going on that you are running in many different directions all at the same time. So I appreciate you taking the time to come and join us today. So thank you.
Chicken with my head cut off.
I get it. So could you tell the listeners a little bit about your background and maybe segue into what you're doing now?
Yeah, so Drew Brooks from Syracuse, New York. RB Woodcraft is a family-owned company. My father started it back in the olden era, I guess I would call it.
Careful now.
Yeah.
He's not much older than me.
He started back in his parents' garage, believe it or not. Started making furniture and trinkets for family and friends. Started getting more clients, getting his name out there. Opened up his first building in North Syracuse a couple years after that. Found a great location right here in Syracuse on the Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, we've been there. Been in business for about 47 years now, up to about 53 employees.
So you're heading up the sales side of the business, and your brother Derek, who we had on episode one, actually, from Winterfair, handles the operations side. So if you could talk a little bit about over the last couple of years, because what I've seen just since I've been involved with the business has been really cool to watch and watch you and your brother kind of really step in and really assume these different levels of responsibility, and maybe a little bit about what that's meant to you and what you're up to.
Yeah, absolutely. So sales, I kind of, starting a little backwards, I started off on the floor when I first started getting involved with the company.
How old were you?
Well, legally 18.
Really?
No. Anyways, a salesman approached me. Thought I had a good personality and a good fit, and I started mentoring underneath him and found something I really enjoyed, had a lot of passion for, and really fell in love with it. I've gone through a handful of different employees. There used to be a team of about five of us. Now, today it's just myself. along with my brother. He started as a production manager, worked his way all the way up to director of operations. More recently, we've obviously assumed a lot more responsibilities. I totally lost where I was going. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. Taking on some different levels of responsibility.
Yes, yes.
So talk a little bit about, especially coming last year and into this year, you've really taken some different approaches, and maybe talk about your traditional customers, clients, and then what you've been doing to kind of build on and build and create some new partnerships.
Sure. Yeah. So we've always been a bidding organization. What that means is, you know, a handful of general contractors are all bidding on a job themselves, and then they elicit invitations to hundreds of subcontractors like us. And it's really all they look for is the lowest number. And for us, that's not that's something we don't really want to be involved with. We know we're never going to be the lowest number, and if we are, that's probably an issue. We want to focus on gaining partnerships with mutual beneficial relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we've done. We focused heavily the last couple of years, and we've gained some really good partnerships with a handful of folks. Of course, we're always looking for more, and it's really been beneficial for us. We're doing a lot of business with some really good companies, and it's really working out well.
I want to backtrack a little bit for our listeners. So the specific product that you provide, can you talk a little bit about the product?
Yes. So we do architectural millwork and casework.
Mm-hmm.
What that means to everyone right now, they're probably scratching their head. It's millwork. So when you walk into a lobby of a Marriott, that mm-hmm. reception desk that you check in on or check out,
right.
That's what we supply. The cabinets when you go to get your breakfast and the mm-hmm. buffet in the morning, that's what we supply. All the way from hospitality to, you know, high-end restaurant and retail. For instance, here in Syracuse at the mall, P.F. Chang's, anything that you see that's wood in there, we supplied. The Apex Entertainment Center that you go take your kids at mm-hmm. or sit at the bar, we supply that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cabinetry and custom millwork.
Perfect. Perfect. So you were talking a little bit about building new partnerships and being somewhat a bidding organization, but you don't want to necessarily be competing on price only. So what's the value proposition as you go to these, call on these new potential partners? How do you position and present RB Woodcraft and make it a value proposition to them? You know, what's gonna help them see you as a valuable partner?
Yeah, so a relationship's built on what? Trust.
Mm-hmm.
So at first, you know, what I focus on is trying to gain the client's trust
mm-hmm.
immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't happen overnight. They've heard every single sales pitch in the world, and I'm not gonna come and tell them I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Right.
But I do like to guarantee two things. It's quality, and it's schedule, meeting mm-hmm. their schedule. And when I say quality, I don't mean quality in the product itself. I mean their experience in working with us. You call us on a weekend, on a 8 o'clock at night, so there's an emergency, we're gonna answer the phone.
Right.
We're gonna put you top of mind. And that's kind of our motto is client first thinking in the company.
Excellent, excellent. And by the way, in full disclosure, Drew has been through some one-on-one leadership development training, yeah. and he smiled when he said, you know, it starts with trust, because that goes right back to one of the things
that's
we
right.
talked about, right? Every relationship, good relationship, is based on trust. And I know in the selling world and sales world, because it's something I deal with, mm-hmm. right, which is kind of interesting because I've spent most of my life learning almost every other aspect of business pretty well until I started my own business, except direct sales and marketing. And now how do I spend a significant chunk of my time but in direct sales and marketing? But
people hate salesmen.
Well, but the reality is it's just a conversation. And I know with me, one of the things, because it comes down to a couple simple things. It is relationships, and people aren't going to buy from you until they buy you.
Exactly.
Right? They have to build a level of trust and faith that you're genuine.
Right.
Or you're not even in consideration. Mm-hmm. Right? And one of the ways I go about that is I don't come in guns blazing telling them how great I am and I can do X, Y, Z, A, B, C. It's more about, hey, tell me about your business. What's going on? Mm-hmm. What are your obstacles? What are your struggles? What are the things that keep you awake at night?
Exactly.
Right? What are the things that you're sweating, right? And, mm-hmm. and let that, because at the end of the day, especially business owners and executives that are running businesses, they love to talk about
themselves.
Well, but their business, and most people, right, because they have a passion, mm-hmm. right? So you can get them talking, and really, then I just start spinning the top. It's just, you know, asking the next question, well, okay, tell me more about that, or... Right. Well, how did that, you know, how did you get to that point? Or, hey, have you thought about this? And as the conversation goes on, they hopefully come to see me, and I'm sure you kind of have a similar approach that this person, A, cares, B, they're genuine, and now the conversation can take another step, right? Now yeah. I might have an opportunity to say, hey, you mentioned A and B. Maybe I can help you with that. Let's talk about that. But it really starts with teasing out of them, what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, they can see bullcrap right through you.
Absolutely.
If, you know, if you're not genuine.
Yeah, I put it simply that most business people have a very sensitive bullshit meter.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, I can't tell you over the years. I used to have really good gatekeepers, right, that worked for me, and they were awesome. And I won't mention any of their names because they're all probably retired now, but. They were wonderful people, but I used to tell them, listen, the rule of thumb is if they don't already have an appointment with me, I'm not taking cold calls. Like, I'm not here to entertain people, you know.
Right.
But eventually some people would get through, and okay, I'll give them 5 minutes. And but, you know, every now and then there was the one person that would be the exception to the rule, and they would be genuine.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd be like, all right, well, let's talk a little more,
right.
You know. But the 90%. Yeah, I think we all have a very strong sensitivity in that meter that says, and I'm sure you've experienced it too. Like,
oh, I get them every single day.
Yeah. And you know, they have to make an impression, or it's game over.
Right.
And the impression has to be, I think, genuineness is really what it starts with.
Right? Absolutely.
When you approach these potential partners, and I know you've had some pretty good success. I mean, we just actually had a meeting yesterday afternoon doing the review for the month, and you guys are having a really good start to the year. Mm-hmm. And I know the success you've driven in bringing business in and building, you know, a really strong backlog with some different and new clients and existing clients.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've approached these people that you've developed these new relationships with, you talked about, okay, we're there for you, right? But what else? I mean, what sets you apart from every other millwork company? I mean, how do you try to position it?
Well, a couple things. First off, you got to bring value to them. Mm-hmm. They've got to have a need for you, mm-hmm. Or else you're just like everybody else. A couple of these partnerships that we have very strong partnerships with today, they had one thing in common. They hated all their millwork subs, so they were willing to talk to me. So I had it in there,
right.
And then, you know, as we just discussed and touched on, you know, making, you know, being reasonable or being personable, and you know, just being a human, not spitting out sales pitches. Nobody wants to hear that.
Right.
The other line, it's, you know, being able to be diverse in the construction industry. Everything changes. Schedules are never on time. They push back. They slide up. You never get what you need on time. I was just dealing with it in the car before I got here. And you're always behind, whether
right.
it's your fault or not. So it's being able to adapt and being diverse and, you know, pulling through and meeting those high demand schedules.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps them coming back.
Right. Yeah. So it is about adding value by service.
Absolutely.
Right. And trying to walk in their shoes and understand their needs.
I wish they'd walk in ours once in a while.
And I get it, because previous life, you know, most recently before I started this business, I lived in a construction world, and similar to you, our product was pretty much at the tail end of a construction project, which, like you guys, you're probably one of the last people in there.
finishes. It's, yeah. They're over budget.
And yeah.
They're
and everybody else is late. Everybody yeah. else already ate up all the time in the project and overran money. Their time and overran their budget. So now, right, now the heat's on, right? And so I get that. It's like you're the last man coming in and you get beat up left and right.
Yeah, all the pressure's on at that point. But again, it's what I was just saying. It's being able to pull through. And,
yeah.
You know, if you're not, if it's not going to go the right way, but it's how you react and fix the issues. And mm-hmm. that's a big thing in relationships. You know, something's going to go bad. Something's going to go wrong. It's how do you react and how do you work together with your client mm-hmm. collaboratively as a team to accomplish the goal.
Because at the end of the day, you don't want to be seen as a supplier or a vendor. You want to be seen as a partner.
A partner.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. And again, it's been cool to watch how you've had some really good success. And I mean that, and you know that. I mean, just looking at the numbers, just again, it's fresh in my head because it was just yesterday afternoon.
Yep.
Yeah. But let's shift gears a little bit, because to be able to execute that in that kind of world that we just talked about, right, you have to have the kind of culture in the building where everybody's customer first, and it's all hands on deck. And the other cool thing that I've been able to watch and in some small way participate in is watching the culture, not that it was bad, but what you folks have been able to do is it is a different culture today than it was even just a couple of years ago when I started working with you. And that's everything to do with you guys that are running, you folks that are running the company, right? And bringing the people up around you. So talk a little bit about those efforts and driving that kind of culture, because, you know, maybe you're not 100% there yet, but you're much further down that path. And do you feel that you, 100%, right, than you were?
100%,
right?
Yeah.
And so talk about that effort.
Yeah, I'm glad you hit on that. Culture has been a huge, huge focus of ours for the past couple of years. And I, like, you know, we started working together with the one-on-one coaching. I think you saw it was okay, but it's only gotten stronger and stronger as to what you see when you come in the building yesterday.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, a couple of years ago, we had some people in the business that were, you know, at the management level. Not putting blame or onus on anybody, but culture was just the culture was terrible. It was everybody against everybody, fighting heads, almost bullies in the building, I would call it.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, you know, we started making the right steps and focusing on putting employees first. Obviously, we had a change in management and leadership, but that was a big focus of myself and my brother. And, you know, trying to make sure that people are happy, because if they're not happy, they're not going to work for you. And
right.
They're not going to, not only not going to work for you, they're going to do a bad job for you. We want people to come in excited every single day, and we want people to do better because they want to do better, not for us, just for themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And you feel it. I mean, it's a great environment. It's a great workplace. And that's almost strange to think about for a subcontractor in the construction industry.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But it's great, you know, and we do these cheesy things all the time. You know, we do cookouts almost every Friday. We had a fund committee for a while. I'm probably going to start one back up once we can breathe. We're very busy right now.
Right.
But yeah, that culture impacts and affects everything.
It was one of the things that was really cool to see, and this is just this past holiday season, so the end of this past year. You guys invited me in for your kind of Christmas celebration. And so all the folks from the factory floor, from the whole business, were coming in and out of that one area, getting food, sitting down, eating. And I had a chance to talk with some of the folks that I don't necessarily interact with, you know, when I'm coming in and out of the building. And it was kind of cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people genuinely, you could tell, for the most part, they really want to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I truly feel that way as well. And first off, I'd like to say that party was not as fun as the year before because it was at Coleman's. But, that's the last time we're going to do another internal party. But, no, yeah, it's and you got to think about it. We have a very diverse culture. We have women anywhere from their 20s to men in their 60s that are worked labor their entire life, you know. So
right.
The fact that we can all collaborate and communicate and respect each other, it's kind of amazing if you think about it.
Yeah. And culturally, you mentioned, now I'm talking broader, the term culturally, you guys have done something I thought was really cool, to because like a lot of businesses around here, you're having a hard time finding good qualified people in the manufacturing space. And so you started tapping into some different communities locally.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talk about that.
So we got involved with a couple different services locally that helps with immigration, with a handful of different groups. The Catholic Charities is one of them. And when I say we have a diverse culture, I mean it's truly diverse. We have a lot of gentlemen from Ukraine, all over the place. And another thing we do, speaking about culture, is we have a professor come in from Syracuse twice a week to help teach English over lunch. So
nice.
And the guys love that, and it's especially been really fun for myself to watch, because you know, I remember I wouldn't be able to even say hello months ago, and now we're having conversations.
Isn't that cool?
It's pretty neat.
Yeah, and you know, by doing that, it's such a great idea in several different levels. But even somewhat selfishly for the company, you're going and finding some really quality people, right? That because of the language barrier might not otherwise, you know, have.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And now you're helping them solve that barrier.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that brings, you know, I think they really appreciate that. And I think that brings, you know, makes them loyal.
Yeah.
And these guys are, I mean, amazing, amazing. It's so talented. Unfortunately, with everything that's going on right now, we're at jeopardy of losing a few, but we're trying everything we can do to help them out.
Right. Right. But I mean, it's kudos, because I think it's just, you know, setting aside, I'm not getting into politics, but the immigration issue, I mean, you really went out and thought about where are there communities of people who could be qualified potential employees, and how do we go about tapping into that? And that's ultimately what you did. And so kudos for that. So you mentioned that you were a student and went through the leadership development and I don't want to embarrass you here, but I, you know, I've told people that don't know you without using your name that, you know, hey, I've got this young guy, and he was like at the perfect place in his personal life and professional life. And when we connected, it was so much fun for me as a coach, because you were all in. Like you were ready, and you were at a perfect place in your life and your professional development. Like, yep, I'm all into this. And it wasn't like work for me when we met, because they were some great discussions, and you did the work outside of our meetings, which doesn't always occur to that level. And it's been cool to watch you take that ball and run with it, because like anything else in life, what you get out of something is really directly proportional to what you put into it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you talk a little bit about what your takeaways were from that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I couldn't agree more. And I was actually thinking about that on my drive over here today. You know, you have to be ready for it. You've got to be, it's got to be the right time for you, because if it's not, you're truly not going to get anything out of it. I deeply believe that.
Yep.
And it's all about what you put into it, absolutely. You know, putting the career aside, it really made me take a step back and kind of open my eyes, and helped me with communication and with relationships with my fiance, with my friends, you know, with faith, whatever it may be. You know, really made me kind of step back and realize the bigger picture. I've got a little bit of my old man in me. Maybe I, you know, in situations at work, I maybe bite before I seek to understand. But yeah, it really helped me in that aspect. The goal setting area was huge for me. I'm still chipping away at him. I'm sure you're going to ask me next time we get together. but yeah, that alone, you know, you're not going to achieve anything bigger than where you're at right now if you don't have goals, you know, and you don't work at them. So that was huge. Communication, you know, really learning how to successfully communicate with others, mm-hmm. and especially other types of personalities.
Right.
That's huge. I had a lot more to say on my way over here, but I can't think of it.
You already touched on a lot, and it's like I said, for me, it's very personally and professionally gratifying to hear, because I can, even if you hadn't said all that, I'm connected enough with you and the company on a regular basis that I can see it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what gets me up in the morning and keeps me excited about doing what I do, is seeing results. And it's just like the guest we had on before you, who's another client of mine, but her business is just exploding. And just, you know, the conversation we had was so cool, because a lot of what she said, it wasn't anything I prompted her to say. It's just she's,
sure.
But she did the work.
Yeah.
Right. All I did was kind of, again, lay the breadcrumbs and kind of, you know, maybe facilitate it and kind of spin the top and get her thinking a little differently. But you got to seize it. You got to do the work. And, right. and you did it just like she did. That's so
and
cool.
It was fun. You know, it was, you know, there's been, I mean, every single time I think we've met, I was telling you about how I used this, you know, learning and my day.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. You know, you were applying it as we were
absolutely
going through.
Absolutely.
It.
It's like, oh wait, I could have done this differently, but
which
next
was
time,
cool, because you had a lot of changes going on during
absolutely.
That time.
Yeah.
And you have since.
Yeah.
So obviously you've seen the value in that, because since that time we've taken now another group of the next level in your organization at RB Woodcraft through leadership development. Talk about, as a leader, a senior leader in the organization, the value you see in developing others' leadership ability in the organization.
Yeah, I mean, to be simple, if we do not bring up, well, any other organization, if you are a leader or have a group of leaders amongst each other, if you not bring up a next group, it's going to be you doing
right.
all the work for your whole career. So I don't believe that there would be growth if we do not start bringing up other leaders in the company. As we were touching on what we did with the next group at RB Woodcraft, I saw tremendous improvements from a handful of different guys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty cool to watch as it slowly happened.
Yeah, now you got to
now
see
today,
it from the other perspective, right? You've
absolutely.
Been on both sides
it was,
of that.
It was yeah. slow, and I saw others, you know, move quicker than others, but it was really cool to see and watch them kind of take off. And then today I'm sometimes I kind of make little remarks from trainings, and they know what I'm talking about.
You throw
like,
it out.
Oh, maybe I should
smile,
do. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. You know.
No, I think that's cool though. But that's what's really cool about that, I think, is you have that shared experience,
mm-hmm.
right? You've been through basically almost the identical process. I think yours was more, probably a bit more in depth, because it was just you and I.
Sure.
Yeah. And with me, there were six of them when I did it with them. And again, I love I guess there's pros and cons to both. Like, you get more one-on-one, maybe more in-depth conversations when it's one-on-one.
Yeah.
The value they had is they were kind of growing together and were bouncing off each other.
That's what I was going to say. I think I like how we did it together as a group, because
yeah.
we want that. We want that
yeah.
team to grow. We want them to grow as a team, and you know,
yeah.
You know, do the same thing to their peers around them that are
right.
maybe below them in positions.
Right.
So,
but also, don't you think that helps to break down those barriers, the silos,
absolutely.
Right between functions? Because
absolutely.
It was cool for me, and I've seen it in other groups doing that same similar process. Is you see these aha moments when they start talking about what their struggles are in their particular group, and all of a sudden they go, oh, I didn't realize that was what
yes.
it was for you. And now there's a greater appreciation, and it gets to kind of that understanding or even that empathy of I think their appreciation for each other and understanding of each other grew a lot more than they probably even realized.
Yeah.
Until they got to
yeah.
the end of it.
Yeah. Now, I'm glad he said that, because, you know, more than often I'm having to tell somebody, you know, I understand you, but put yourself in their shoes.
Right.
This is what they're dealing with, and this
right.
is why they're having an issue with you.
Right.
Or an issue, whatever the issue may be. So, and you know, I never really thought about it that way with that leadership group, but you had people from every department.
You did.
There,
you literally had, you know, every department.
Sales, engineering, production, everything. So, yeah. But so, yeah, like I said, I find myself doing that almost on a daily.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it actually, it works. It depends how heated they're at the moment. But
well, there is always that.
Yeah, there's. Right? But it does. It works great.
That's cool. That's cool. So where do you go from here? What do you see in Drew's immediate and future beyond that and for RB Woodcraft?
Yeah, so it's going to take a couple months to get out of the crazy mess we're in. It's a good mess, but, you know, in the future.
Say those are Rockefeller problems.
Yes, exactly. No, down the road, I mean, we're growing. We're slowly growing, but, you know, we want to be stable. Talking about partnerships, we want a handful of different companies and partners that we do most of our business with.
Mm-hmm.
We are expanding. We're obviously, you know about this. We're talking about putting a big addition on.
That's exciting.
Yes, it is. But
expensive. How many square feet?
Just 6,000. That's as much as we can put on the property.
That'll eat up the rest of the property.
Oh, like that.
Yeah.
We could use about 20.
Yeah, yeah.
But absolutely, you know, we're growing. We wanna, you know, if not double where we are now in the next 20 years. We're working nationwide. I'm gonna keep focusing on the southern states. So the wintertime, I can get down there.
It's a good plan.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
Good, good. Well, I want to thank you again for coming on, and it's been worth the wait. Really has. I really appreciate you. I appreciate everything you're doing, and thank you for your time.
So yeah, likewise.
Thanks. That'll do it for episode 6. Come back and see us for episode 7.